Fanny laughed. I was a foolish child. Fanny stopped laughing.
Maybe not so foolish. Will Stevens a good man.
Oh, for pity's sake, must we discuss that man all day? Fanny, not given to holding in her words, looked me over but said nothing further. The second time I saw Will Stevens was a few weeks later. It was dusk. Again, I was at the window, this time studying the purple, pink, and blue of the sky, when Will walked into my vision. I went weak at the sight of him. With his strong shoulders back, he strode with the gait of a man sure of himself. He was on his way to the kitchen house, where I guessed Belle and his son waited for him. I spent the night hating him, but comforted myself after settling on a plan of revenge. I vowed that when I finally came face to face with Will Stevens, I would hold my head high and look through him as though he did not exist. However, I did not have that opportunity. For this day, he and Marshall had an altercation that ended with Will leaving for his own farm. I knew trouble lay ahead when Marshall left to vent his anger on Will, who was working in the kitchen yard alongside the people from the quarters. As the argument escalated and then climaxed, Marshall struck Will and knocked him to the ground. It was Papa George who stepped in, and somehow convinced Marshall that the day's work could finish without him. And it was Papa who led him back to the house and settled him by the fire in the study with a bottle of brandy for company. Early the next morning, Papa George came to the big house with startling news. During the night, Will Stevens had packed up and left for his neighboring farm, taking with him Belle and Jamie, as well as Ben and Lucy and their two children. Incensed, Marshall rode into town. Mama and I were at the bedroom window when he returned, later in the day. The sheriff rode with him, but what alarmed me was seeing another rider alongside my husband. It was none other than his old friend Rankin. I was about to turn from the window when Mama gasped. I looked again and this time saw a little boy seated on a horse in front of the sheriff. It was Jamie, Belle's son. I took Mama's advice and stayed with Miss Martha as Mama ran from the house to take the crying child from the horseman. I was required to share my afternoon dinner with these men. As Beatty and Uncle served us, we three listened to the men recount how they had taken the child from his frantic mother. Marshall claimed that Will had broken his contract, and furthermore Jamie, at the least, was his property. Seeing Marshall's delight, I wondered if this was what he had been planning all along. When I could take no more, I declared a headache and excused myself. Once out of the dining room, I slipped out the back door and ran to the kitchen house. Mama frowned when I appeared. Suki was sitting on a bench holding Jamie in her lap. The little boy was asleep with his thumb in his mouth, so exhausted by his ordeal that he did not disturb himself with his own loud hiccups. "What can I do?" I asked Mama.
"You best go back," she said.
"Surely there is something I can do." Mama didn't have an answer, but to my relief, she said she had sent word to Belle that Jamie was safe. I told Mama of my suspicion that Marshall had maneuvered all of this, that he knew the law. "Will is bound to do something soon," I said to reassure the both of us. "Surely he won't let Marshall keep his son." Mama looked at me sharply.
"What you say?"
"Will Stevens. If I know him at all, he'll fight for his boy." Mama's eyes narrowed.
"What you mean?"
She frowned and looked at me disbelievingly.
"You mean you thinkin'—"
She stopped short when Marshall appeared at the door. He wasted no time but came directly over to me and grasped my arm.
"Well," he said, "I see you've recovered."
He glanced at Suki and the still-sleeping Jamie, then glared at Mama.
"What foolishness were you talking about with my wife?"
Mama dropped her head, but not before I saw her fear.
"Master Marshall," she said, "I don't know nothing about foolish talk."
Marshall twisted my arm painfully as he drew me from the kitchen. He turned back to Mama.
"I'll sell anybody who brings talk like that up to the big house.
My arm burned. "Marshall, you're hurting me," I said, trying to pull free. I looked to Mama for help, but her eyes were down, and I saw for the first time the true extent of her helplessness. We were but a few months into our marriage, and already I knew how troubled it was. Desperate to right things, I doubled my efforts to gain Marshall's goodwill. When I was with my husband, I gave the appearance of being unmindful to anyone but him. I no longer spoke openly to anyone but waited for stolen moments to catch up with the latest news or to hear of a small need that I might be able to satisfy. It was Beatty I felt closest to. She best understood my dilemma, as she witnessed it daily in the dining room. Fanny mostly saw to the care of Miss Martha, and though I knew she cared, she remained distant from me. Jamie stayed down in the kitchen house, and my beloved Suki was often needed there to care for him. I dared not go down to see for myself, but soon I heard of everyone's concern. Beatty confided that Jamie had always been uncommonly attached to Belle. Now, she said, without her, he was becoming increasingly withdrawn. I feigned indifference when I learned from my husband that Will Stevens had filed papers in court in an attempt to take the child back. Privately, I feared that Marshall's knowledge of the law would enable him to win the battle. I could only imagine Belle's despair. I longed to ease it, to send her words of relief, but I knew how tenuous the situation was, and I certainly knew that I was not in a position to make a bid for the release of her child. I was not surprised when Rankin was again brought on as overseer. His attitude toward me while in Marshall's presence was just short of simpering. Away from my husband, however, he let me know that he considered me of little consequence. I encouraged Marshall to speak to me of the farm, to tell me his plans for the future. One day he informed me that he and Rankin had decided to move away from the diversification of crops, a method Will Stevens had incorporated, and go back to growing only tobacco. In my eagerness to show my interests, I made a mistake and asked if he was not concerned that continued growth of the same crop might not deplete the soil. Marshall instantly became outraged and accused me of defending Will Stevens and his way of doing things. That was not the first time I saw Marshall's jealousy, and I began to wonder if, back in Williamsburg, he had guessed my feelings for Will. I reassured Marshall of my loyalty to him, but he ended the conversation by telling me to mind the household and leave the business to him. Knowing I had reached an impasse, I agreed. Following that, I kept my conversations with Marshall light and superficial. With her scheduled doses of laudanum, Miss Martha's days were now routine. What for me was tedious provided structure and balance for her. Mama encouraged her to walk, and though she tired easily, in time she became steadier on her feet. Mama, Fanny, and Suki shared in her care, and I fell into a daily habit of coming in to see her first thing in the morning and again in the late afternoon. I continued to read to her, and at other times sat at her bedside doing my needlework. Miss Martha now spoke, sometimes even using full sentences, though her mind only hovered in reality. I remained Isabel to her, and it was I who most easily calmed her when she grew agitated. We had been home a few months when the doctor made a routine visit to see Miss Martha. I remembered Dr. Mentz well from my earlier years. He was the same doctor who had treated both the captain during his illness and Miss Martha before she left for Williamsburg. Since I had last seen him, his hair had gone a snowy white. If he remembered me, or if he had misgivings about my new position, he did not show it. After his examination, "Continue on with what you are doing," was his instruction to me, although Mama May and Fanny were both present. Since dinner was about to be served, I invited Dr. Mentz to stay, and he readily accepted. When Marshall joined us, although he looked surprised to see our guest, he did not appear unhappy. As we dined, Dr. Mentz reported his findings to Marshall. Though Marshall had not paid a visit to his mother since our arrival, he gave the impression that he was involved and up to date on Miss Martha's condition. He thanked the doctor and made it clear that he gave all the credit to me for his mother's improved state. When he spoke of his appreciation, his eyes rested on me, but I was no longer certain of his sincerity.
Chapter 40. Belle.
Marshall knows what he's doing when he takes my boy. You take a baby from a mama, there's nothing more you can do to her. Will Stevens says he'll do everything he can to get Jamie back. He says, whatever you do, Belle, don't go back there. He's waiting for you. If you are on Marshall's property, I can't protect you the same way I can if you are here. My mind don't move. It just sits there. All I can see is my Jamie screaming. 2 days, 2 nights, I don't cry, I don't talk. When Ben comes, he says, Belle, don't worry. You know Mama taking good care of Jamie. I just look at Ben. I don't say nothing. Because if I do, I say, what do you know? You still got your two boys. Maybe you give one of your boys to Marshall so I can get my Jamie back. But I don't say nothing. I just tell him to go away. Then Lucy comes. First time she's here in my kitchen house. Belle, she says, I know you and me, we each got a side of Ben, pulling on him. But here at Will Stevens' place, you and me got to work to get along. I know what Jamie is to you. You take my boys, same as taking my life. I come here to let you know I stand alongside you now. Lucy's big like Mama, and when she puts her arms around me, I start to cry. I cry for Jamie, then I cry for Mama and for Papa too. I cry for my kitchen house. I even cry for the captain. Everything's gone, I say. Everything's gone. No, Lucy says. Jamie's still here, so is Mama and Papa. They just living on the other side of the trees. You got to stand up, Belle. For sure your boy coming back, and when he do, he need you strong. At dark, Ben comes to see me again. He says Lucy sends him to me. She tells him that I need him. Maybe all this time I got Lucy wrong. That same night, Papa comes, following the creek. He comes fast, puffing and having to sit before he can talk. Ben says, Papa, next time there's news, maybe you ought to send Ida's boy, Eddie. He know the way. And he get caught, he know how to keep his mouth shut. Papa says, Son, you say I'm getting too old to get over here? Ben says, Papa, I'm saying, well, yup. I guess I'm saying you getting old. They laugh like old friends. Papa says, Belle, Jamie doing just fine. Everybody watching over him. Marshall don't have nothing to do with him. Beattie now living in the kitchen house and she keeps Suki and Jamie with her. Everybody watching out for Jamie. Papa look down, fool with his hands, then say, but Rankin back. Down at the quarters, they all trying to stay one step ahead of that devil. And Abinya got her own trouble up at the big house. Marshall drinking real hard. After Papa tells me that Jamie's doing all right, I settle some. I'm gonna wait to see how things go. For sure, though, if Jamie don't come back, I'll go get him myself. Then I'll take him and run. Next day I get back to work and get this kitchen house set up. Ben and Lucy got their own cabin, and they're both going to work the fields. Will Stevens is building a big house. Maybe when he's done, I'll ask Will if Lucy can work the big house with me. I work hard, then after a week, I can't take no more and go to see my boy. I follow the water up, go past the quarters, and stay down in the trees. Sure enough, there's my four-year-old boy, sitting out by the kitchen house, looking around like he's wanting his mama. I bite my own hand so I don't call. Jamie, Jamie, I'm here. But right then, Suki comes out to give him something to drink. She's playing with him when I see Marshall over at the horse barn. Suki sees him too, and real quick she takes Jamie into the kitchen house and closes the door. Going home, I can hardly walk for crying. But then I remember something. I know where Papa keeps the gun down in the barn, and I know where he keeps the key. That settles me. Marshall does anything to my boy, bam, he's good as dead.
Chapter 41. Lavinia. I take full responsibility for the relationship that developed between Miss Martha and Belle's son, Jamie. I gave my permission the day Suki asked if she might bring Jamie with her to the big house. She suggested he play in the blue room while she assisted me in caring for the mistress. It was August 1802. I had not yet been married a full year, but both Mama and I suspected I was already with child. While the others did the harvesting of the garden that autumn, I stayed in the big house and took on more responsibility in caring for Miss Martha. I requested to have Suki there to help me. Since my arrival, she had been the one I depended on. She was the one who loved me as before. Try as I might, I could not get back the friendship with Fanny or Beatty that I once had. I continued to make friendly overtures, but the twins kept a distance. I tried in every way I knew how to show I had not changed, that I considered them my equals, but it was obvious since my return that they saw me in a different light. I was terribly lonely and was so grateful for Suki's friendship that I did everything I could to accommodate her. She rewarded me with unfailing loyalty.
"Miss Abinya, he's so sad," Suki said about Jamie. Her large dark eyes were sorrowful. "He just sitting there when I up here."
"Bring him along, then," I told Suki. "We'll take some playthings from the nursery to keep him occupied in the blue room." It had been almost 9 months since his capture, and both Beatty and Mama had expressed their concern about Jamie's deepening retreat into himself. He spoke little, and what distressed them most was that he refused any comfort from the family.
"He blaming us, thinking that we keeping him from his Mama," Beatty said.
Will Stevens had been unsuccessful in his legal fight to reunite Belle with her son, and Marshall was jubilant the day he won possession. I made one attempt to discuss Jamie's release with Marshall. The vehement anger that he expressed at my request made obvious that any intercession on my part was not only hopeless, but if continued, might draw attention to the boy, who Marshall, on the whole, disregarded. By now I fully understood the position I was in as Marshall's wife. I had discovered what my family had known all along. Pretense of ignorance could serve me well. I learned to not react, nor to give my opinion, but with a smile or a nod, suggest agreement with all of Marshall's plans. I became guarded and no longer spoke about my true feelings. When I allowed Jamie in the big house, I gave little thought to Marshall learning of this. He never visited his mother, and the only times he ventured upstairs were on the increasingly infrequent nights when he came to my room. On the very first day, Miss Martha sensed Jamie's presence in her outer room. In the weeks before, Mama and I had decided to lessen her laudanum dosage. As a result, though there was an emerging clarity and our patient had become physically stronger, she also was more restless and more easily agitated. That morning, before either Suki or I could anticipate her move, Miss Martha rose from her chair and walked to the blue room. She stopped when she saw Jamie, then approached him slowly. She stared down at the child, who looked as though he might have been one of her own, then bent to his level.
"I want my mama," he pleaded.
"Yes," she said, and he went into her open arms. Over the next few days, as Miss Martha spent hours distracting the boy, it was remarkable how her agitation eased. We brought many of the old nursery toys down from the attic, and while she rested on her bed, my mother-in-law encouraged Jamie to bring the toy soldiers and play alongside her. As she had with Suki, Miss Martha read to him, and it did not upset him that she often repeated the same lines over and over. Clearly he felt safe with her, and through mutual need they clung to each other. By the late fall, the two had become so close that Miss Martha had a small bed brought from the nursery, and Jamie began to spend his nights in the blue room. Mama was uncomfortable with the relationship, but relieved that Jamie had begun to eat and sleep once again. He no longer begged to see his mother and appeared to accept Miss Martha as a substitute. Perhaps she quieted the anguish of what he perceived as Belle's abandonment. As well, Miss Martha was more coherent and content than ever. Suki and I understood their attachment easier than did the others. I cared for Suki as deeply as I might my own child, and I knew that she reciprocated my feelings. I was resting on my bed the day Marshall made an unexpected visit to his mother's room. To this day, I do not know why he came. Perhaps he was on his way to see me and saw something that drew him toward his mother's bedroom. I heard his voice and quickly made my way to Miss Martha's room. I met a frightened Suki in the blue room and sent her to the kitchen house for Mama.
"What is this new madness?"
Marshall stared at Jamie asleep on the bed next to his mother.
"Shh," Miss Martha said.
Marshall stepped forward as though to take the child from her. Jamie woke and grasped Miss Martha.
"Sir," she said, "leave us." "Mother," Marshall shouted, "that's a Negro's boy."
"He is mine," she said. I rushed to Marshall's side and touched his arm. "Let her be, Marshall, please don't upset her."
He swung toward me, his arm raised, and I pulled back in fear.
"Marshall!" I cried. He stopped and looked around as though disbelieving of the scene. When he rushed from the room, I followed him, but he refused to answer my call. That night he did not come back to the house for supper. I was a few months along and now certain that I was to have a child. Marshall was still upset at dinner the next day, but before he could begin a tirade, I informed him of my pregnancy. His reaction was immediate. At once he became tender toward me. Was there something I needed? Could he send to Williamsburg for anything? I had not anticipated this response, and to my great relief, we finished the meal peacefully, discussing plans for the child. How grateful I was that with the news of my pregnancy, Marshall appeared to have forgotten about Jamie and Miss Martha. Following my announcement, and I must admit, to no regret on my part, Marshall no longer came to my room for marital intimacy. Then came a shift within the household. The very air was charged. Something had happened that I did not understand. All of my family had become more reserved, more withdrawn. Mama May was the most changed. She was distracted and easily upset. She didn't speak her mind as openly as she once had, though she did say that she felt Jamie should be immediately taken from Miss Martha. Foolishly, I did not listen to her, but insisted that the two be allowed the comfort they found in each other. Mama gave in, and I tried to please her in other ways. Beatty stopped coming up from the kitchen. When I asked for her, Mama made the repeated excuse that she was too busy. Suki alone remained unchanged, and I clung to her. I used my pregnancy as an excuse to have her with me, and soon had the other nursery bed moved into a corner of my bedroom for her. Fanny was more distant than ever, so when I heard she wanted permission to jump the room with Eddie, Ida's son, from the quarters, I was anxious to help. To please me, Marshall agreed to Fanny's wedding and a celebration. The ceremony was scheduled for Christmas Day, and I took great pleasure in planning the event. As my girth grew, so did Marshall's tenderness. To my relief, he did not mention Jamie to me again, nor did he make another visit to see his mother. Although he continued with heavy drink, his bad behavior around me lessened, and our afternoon meals were taken in a more peaceful atmosphere. I grew hopeful that perhaps all was not lost, and I began to wonder if our baby might be the salve for our ailing marriage. But I was wrong. Insulated as I was spared from learning what I would have been helpless to stop. As I said, the air crackled of it, but I did not understand. The day before Christmas, lonely and wanting to see Beatty, I decided that I could justify a visit down to the kitchen. If questioned, I would tell Marshall the truth. I needed to know if Beatty required extra help with food preparation for Fanny's wedding feast. Papa was at the back of the kitchen house chopping wood, and I was so happy to see him that I dared stop for a minute to tease. The stack of wood was so high that I asked him what he planned to do with all that fuel. He brought down the axe and shattered the log, then brushed the back of his hand over his eyes before he looked at me. I could not mistake the fact that he had been crying. "Papa," I said, "what is it?"
"Nothing, child."
He set up another log.
"I working hard, and the water come in my eyes."
Unsure what to say, I reached out to touch his arm. "Papa."
"Abinya," he said, looking around. "You best get back up to the big house."
Hurt but determined to have my way, I continued on to the door of the kitchen house. The pleasant aroma of pies and spices belied the heavy atmosphere in the warm room. I walked in to hear Beatty in conversation with Mama.
"Don't cry, Mama."
Beatty stood with her arm around her mother's shoulder.
"I don't fight no more, so he stopped hitting on me. It not so bad. Come on, Mama, stop this crying."
"Who is hitting you?" I spoke louder than I had intended, startling both women. Mama dried her eyes while Beatty turned to the fireplace.
"Nobody,"
Beatty answered, her back to me.
"Nobody hitting on me."
"But I heard you say—" Mama interrupted me.
"Miss Abinya, like Beatty say, everything all right. Besides, what you doing down here?"
"I came to offer my help," I said defensively.
"You know that Master Marshall don't want you in this house," Mama said. "Now, you best get back up there."
Her words stung me so that I left for the big house, passing Papa, who continued to pound his axe into the wood. I went straight to Miss Martha's room, where Uncle had a strong fire going, and where Suki and Jamie asked me to join their game of cards. I thanked them, declined, and sat back to watch. But my thoughts were not with them. Was it possible that Rankin could be hurting Beatty? Worse, if he was, what could I do about it? I thought to appeal to Marshall, but something warned me not to go in that direction. Fanny's wedding was a big event. In the early evening, a bonfire was built in the kitchen yard, and a feast was set out on long wooden tables. As I was in the last month of confinement, it was not considered appropriate that I show myself, so I was not there when Marshall conducted the short ceremony. Later, though, I decided that I had had enough seclusion, and I took it upon myself to go down and watch the festivities from a sheltered spot in the trees. I had not expected to see Ben and Lucy up for the evening from Will's farm. When they caught sight of me, they came over.
"When you gonna have that baby?"
Lucy asked shyly. "One more month," I said.
"Lil' birdie having a baby."
Ben shook his head as though disbelieving. I felt warm when he used my pet name.
"Not so little,"
I patted my stomach. And Ben looked embarrassed.
"How is Belle?"
I asked, to ease Ben's discomfort.
"She missing her boy," Ben said. "And I know she missing the family, but Master Will, he good to her."
"Belle have her own fine house, just like this one,"
Lucy said, pointing. When we all looked to the kitchen house, we saw Beatty rushing about, and Lucy decided to go offer her help. Ben remained at my side.
"Isn't Will's big house finished yet?"
I asked.
"It done enough that he living in it,"
Ben said. In spite of myself, my voice turned cold.
"Isn't Belle living up there with him yet?"
Ben's eyes opened wide.
"Abinya, what you saying?"
My head felt light with anger.
"Well, they might as well live in the same house. Everyone knows they have their son."
Ben looked around uneasily.
"Will Stevens not the daddy of that boy, Abinya?"
he said quietly. Sure you knows that. I must have swayed. Ben sat me on a large rock.
I get Mama for you, he said.
No, Ben, don't go, I protested, but he rushed off, and soon Mama hurried over.
Come, child, you best come up to the big house with me. Master Marshall thinking that you up there.
But I grew stubborn. No one can see me, I assured Mama, and told her that I would soon go back up to rest. First, I said I wanted to watch some dancing. I needed to see some fun.
Master Marshall not like this.
He doesn't need to know, I said. Mama looked uncertainly back toward the kitchen house.
I gonna help Beatty with the food, but I come back to get you, she said, before she hurried away.
As the music played and I watched everyone dance, my mind kept returning to Ben's words. Nothing made sense. Was it possible that Will was not Jamie's father? If so, then who was? Ida came into the shadows where I sat, and I knew that Mama had sent her. Ida, I said, with happy surprise. I had not seen her since before my years in Williamsburg. She smiled warmly.
They saying that you the one that get this wedding for Fanny and my boy Eddie.
I made room for her to sit beside me on the large flat rock. I was shocked at how she had aged since I had last seen her. Her hair was now white, and her shoulders were stooped. When she reached over to pat my protruding stomach, I caught her twisted brown hand in mine. Ida, I whispered, you must tell me something. She looked at me with concern. Ida, who is the father of Belle's child? Who is Jamie's father? When Ida looked away, I saw that she was checking the proximity of others, and I knew that she would tell the truth. She spoke low, close to my ear.
It, Master Marshall. I know this, 'cause at that time, Rankin still used me to make babies, and he tell me. But you don't say nothing. They kill me, they find out I say something.
Ida said nothing further. We sat without words while I tried to absorb this sickening news. Marshall with Belle. How could that be? I had thought that he hated Belle. Then it struck me how alike Jamie was to Marshall in appearance. How could I have missed something so obvious? Our attention was drawn back to the bonfire by the loud shouts and clapping as Mama May and Papa George were singled out for a dance. Off to the side, Rankin slumped against a tree, a bottle of brandy in his hand. My eyes traveled, and as I took in the kitchen house, I saw Beatty emerge and wipe her forehead with her apron. Seeing her, I was reminded of our friendship and of the trust I had in her. I needed to speak to someone of this bitter news and knew that I could take Beatty into my confidence. I was about to turn back to Ida to ask if she might bring Beatty to me, when I saw Marshall emerge from the shadows of the kitchen house. He came to the kitchen door, and in disbelief, I watched him greet Beatty. Her smile was hesitant, but she quickly gave him her hand as they went into the kitchen together, and Marshall closed the door behind them. I could not miss the meaning. Ida saw what I saw, but we did not exchange words. When I struggled to my feet, Ida rose too. She walked alongside me as I made my way up the hill to the big house. She came up the stairs with me and helped me into my night clothes, then assisted me into bed. I was grateful that she, having lived through her own unspeakable tragedies, knew that words were unnecessary.
Chapter 42. Belle. When Papa comes to tell me that Jamie's staying up with Miss Martha at the big house, I start carrying on so bad that Ben goes for Lucy. Every day I'm thinking that I'll get my boy back. Now I just know I'll never see him again. Papa says, Belle, Belle, Jamie doing real good up there. He eating again, and he have all the nice toys to play with. Miss Martha treat him real good. No! No! I start breathing hard. Then I can't get no air. All I can think is Jamie's up in the big house, and Marshall's gonna get at him. When Lucy comes, she takes me outside, away from Papa. Come on, she says, making me walk. You got to take in the air. No! No, I say. I don't want him in the big house. Miss Martha's crazy, and she'll make my boy crazy. You got to breathe, Lucy says. Stop talking and take in some air. Lucy, they have him up in the big house, I say. Keep walking, Lucy says. I'll go for the gun, I say. I'll go get my boy. I try to pull away, but Lucy won't let go. Belle, you got to settle down. Papa in there waiting on you. He got to go back up. You know if Rankin find him, Papa in big trouble. But they have Jamie in the big house. Belle, carrying on like this won't help. Papa don't leave unless he know you doing all right. You got to think of Papa, the chance he take to come here and tell you how your boy doing. I know Lucy's right, so I try to slow myself down. I look up for the moon. I pull air in and push it out again. I do this until I settle some. You all right now? Lucy asks. I nod. When we go back in, Papa's sitting there not looking me in the face. I'm all right now, Papa, I say. I get so scared about my boy. Yo, Jamie doing fine, Belle. I don't want him up at the big house, Papa. What if Miss Martha don't ever let him go? What if Marshall... I see Papa's face go tight. What? Papa? I say. What else you come to say?
It beat him, he says.
What?
I ask. Marshall using Beatty, he says, just like that. Papa drops his own head and starts to cry. I never, never before see Papa cry. Ben, me, Lucy, we all look at the other, waiting for somebody to say something. Ben stands up and starts to walk back and forth. I go to Papa and put my arm around him. He takes out the rag that Mama makes him carry and blows his nose.
There's nothing I can do for my own girl, he says.
Course not, Papa, I say.
When did this start to happen? Ben asks.
He don't sound like himself.
A while now, Papa says. Around the time of Benya tell him she having a baby. First it go real hard on Beatty, but she say things eased up. You know that girl, she don't complain about nothing. She even telling Mama and me that she gonna make this work for everybody. Marsha gets with her almost every night, and he talking to her. Beatty say, these this way she find out what happening on the place.
Maybe he'll leave her alone when Lavinia has her baby, I say. Nobody says nothing to that. Next day I talk to Will Stevens, tell him Jamie's up in the big house. Will says that he'll go back to court and try again to get Jamie back here with me. You just hold on, Belle, he says. Will?
Yes?
There's something else for you to know, I say.
What is it?
Ben was talking with Lavinia at Fanny's wedding. He finds out that she's thinking all along that you're the daddy of Jamie.
What?
All along, Lavinia never knows that Marshall's the one. I never did tell her about that night when Marshall got me. When she's living in Williamsburg, Marshall tells her that you're the daddy.
Good God.
Mama says in some ways, Lavinia thinks like a child. She don't always get what's going on. She comes back here wanting everything to be the same. It's like she don't know that when she marries Marshall, she's gonna take on his world. Mama's trying to help her see it right. But like Mama say, sometimes we got to live it out before we learn. I'm talking away, but when I look at Will Stevens, he looks like he don't hear a word I'm saying. When he goes, I stand at the door. I watch him walk real slow up to his new house and think how big it looks for one man living there all by himself.
Chapter 43, Lavinia. I stayed in my bed for 2 days, feverish and without appetite. Marshall came with questions of concern, and when he reached for my hand, I pulled it away, sick with disgust. Mama nursed me silently, but on the third morning, after I refused yet another breakfast, she secured my bedroom door before she pulled a chair to my bedside.
"Ida say you know some things,"
Mama said, positioning herself to face me. I turned my head away.
"Ida say,"
she spoke quietly,
"Ida say you see Marshall go with Beattie."
I heard the struggle in her voice, and still I faced the wall.
"Ida say you know about Jamie,"
she whispered. I swung my head to look at her.
"Ida's saying a lot,"
I snapped. Mama's head dropped.
"I'm sorry, Mama."
"Times this life not easy, Abinya,"
Mama said.
"But how? When was he?"
"With Belle." Mama shushed me and looked toward the door.
"We don't talk about this no more. It happened. Now you got to forget about it. He find out you know about this, he don't stop until he find out who talking to you, and then there no telling what he do."
"But Beattie, Mama, how could Beattie go with—"
"You think this what Beattie want?"
Mama whispered.
"You think she want get with him?"
"I saw them at the kitchen house," I said. "She didn't even make an attempt to refuse him."
"Abinya, you looking through your eyes. You not even trying to look through Beattie's. You know that girl don't have the right to say no. After Master Marshall leave for the day, I bring Beattie to you. You see for yourself what happened when that girl say no."
Mama's chin trembled as she fought tears. She rose and went to look out the tall window. I was quiet for a long while before I dared to speak.
"I'm sorry, Mama,"
I said. "You don't have to bring her. I know you're right."
"This a hard thing,"
Mama said, wiping tears from her face.
"This a hard thing."
I looked out the window past Mama and saw that it had begun to snow. I looked at the fire blazing in the fireplace and thought of Papa George chopping wood behind the kitchen house. Now I understood what had driven him that day.
"Mama,"
I whispered, "is there something I can do?" Mama came back to sit in the chair beside me. She blew her nose before she took my hand.
"There are times all we can do is pray to the Lord,"
she said.
"We say, Lord, we don't know, but we sure do need some help."
She rested her hand on my large stomach.
"And we don't forget to say thanks for the blessings, Lord."
Mama spoke to me tenderly again.
"Come, child. It's time for you to eat. Then get up and move. All this fussing not good for the baby."
A month later, at the end of January, Mama was there with Fanny to deliver my daughter, Eleanor. We called her Ellie from the start, and everyone loved her. Marshall expressed great delight that he was the father of our infant girl, and in the heady joy of motherhood, I tried desperately to set aside my grievances with him. Suki would not leave Ellie's side. During the night, she kept the cradle next to her bed. When I nursed Ellie, Suki sat alongside to watch that I positioned the baby's head correctly. Mama came often to hold Ellie and to sing to her until she slept. And then there was Fanny. One might have thought that Ellie was her very own. In every spare moment, Fanny peeked in, requesting to hold her. Uncle Jacob, too, stopped by often on the pretext of tending the fire. Even Papa George came up to see the baby late one afternoon after Marshall had left the farm. Papa held her and my heart soared when he said,
"She looked just like our little Abinya."
Finally, when Beatty had not yet come, I asked to see her. I was nursing the baby when Mama brought her up. "Come in, Bee," I said, seeing her hesitate in the doorway. "Come see her." Beatty refused to meet my eyes when I offered my baby for inspection. "Isn't she perfect?" I asked, full of new motherhood.
"She looked as like you," Beatty said with a shy smile.
She was right. My daughter had the same elfin ears, the same oval face, and the same vibrant hair color. Everyone noted the likeness, and it seemed everyone considered it a triumph. In the early autumn of Ellie's first year, we spent some time in the shade of the great oak tree. The scene was idyllic. Often in the late afternoon, Uncle Jacob set up our quilting frame, and we brought out our chairs. Fanny and I stitched while Suki sat on a blanket with Ellie. If Mama had time, she joined us, though Beatty always begged off, saying that she had work to do in the kitchen. Miss Martha was content to rest in her room with Jamie playing quietly at her side. Her doses of laudanum were at a minimum, and her condition had changed dramatically. Though she had limitations, she often appeared quite lucid, and we accepted it when she referred to Jamie as my son. Jamie never mentioned Belle, and his attachment to Miss Martha was so strong that one wondered if he remembered his life before. I was content with this, though Mama May was not. She did not speak of her disapproval outright, but often I saw her watch the two of them interact, and her frown told me more than words might have. Miss Martha's response to my baby was curious. A few days after I gave birth, I brought Ellie to visit her grandmother. For the first time I saw my mother-in-law accept a child into her arms and then release it, aware that the child was not her own. When I told her the baby's name, she repeated it a few times and did not forget it, though she continued to refer to me as Isabel. On the whole, my time was consumed with caring for my newborn, but when I saw Marshall, he was drinking less and appeared more content than he had been since our arrival. He remained solicitous of me and continually asked if I had want or need of anything. I assumed it was the birth of Ellie that had brought Marshall some peace, and for the sake of our child I attempted to set aside the horrible truth of which I was now aware. But my success was short-lived. In the months after Ellie's birth, though Marshall had not visited me at night, I had hoped that his relationship with Beatty had ended. However, in late fall, I was horror-struck when it became clear that Beatty was with child. She continued to serve our meals in the dining room with Uncle's assistance. Daily, the situation grew more awkward. Marshall did not know that I was aware of their relationship, nor was he aware that I watched as his eyes followed her. I grew more resentful with each passing day. I did not want my husband to resume his marital rights, but I was horrified to think that his relationship with Beatty continued. There were moments in the dining room of intense strain, moments when I caught an approving look or a smile given to Beatty that felt like an insult to me. I felt unable to direct my anger toward Marshall, and in an effort to rid myself of it, I looked instead toward Beatty, a safer target. I spoke to no one of this, and my unhappiness festered. My reasoning became diseased, and as my anger grew, so too did my resentments. I began to wonder why Marshall made the choice to stay with Beatty. I did not want him near me. In fact, the idea of our intimacy repulsed me. Yet why would he choose her over me? What did I lack as a woman? Where had I failed? In spite of myself, in spite of knowing how their relationship had come about, I began to blame Beatty. I couldn't rid myself of the belief that Beatty had encouraged Marshall in this wrongdoing. I dared not confront Marshall, so I struck out at Beatty, I often spoke sharply to her, and did not seek for her the privileges I sought for the others of my family. I made unkind comments about her appearance while I watched Marshall attempt to show indifference. But it was his failure to do so that had me question a deeper possibility. Did he care for her? Did he love her? Finally, I could stand it no longer and went to Mama. I used Beatty's growing size and her cumbersome efforts to serve us as my complaint. To my great relief, Mama agreed and sent Fanny to replace Beatty in the dining room. This, however, had its own repercussions. Fanny, while serving, of course overheard the dinner conversation. As was her nature, she found it impossible to maintain an uninterested stance, and when she heard something that did not sit well with her, she was quick to purse her lips or roll her eyes. Marshall frequently called her on this. "Do you have something to say?" he often asked, and I was always surprised at how forthcoming were Fanny's comments. There were times when her opinions angered my husband, and he would dismiss her from the room, but more likely, he would laugh heartily. I greeted those times with a mixture of relief and envy. Why, I wondered, couldn't I be more like Fanny, more unafraid? During this period, I began a correspondence with Meg in Williamsburg. I sought to renew my interest in botany, and I wrote of it to Meg, with apologies for my lack of earlier communication. She held no blame, and said that she knew how busy I must be caring for my daughter. She had not yet married, and her letters were quick to point out that she was not in a great hurry to do so. Along with her correspondence, Meg sent books, and I, in turn, gifted her with those I thought she might enjoy. I clung to my connection to Meg, though I told her nothing of the problems within my marriage. About a month after Fanny began to serve us in the dining room, Marshall and I received a letter from Will Stevens. In it, he offered a great deal of money for Jamie. He said that Belle, in her grief over the loss of her son, had become ill. Will feared for her life, and asked for Marshall to exercise compassion in the matter.
"Compassion for a whore!"
Marshall tore up the letter. Still too frightened to speak up for Belle, but feeling guilty for my failure, I decided to take other action. That night, I wrote to her. In an attempt to give Belle relief, I told her that I watched over Jamie as I might my own son, and that he was safe in my care. I told her, too, of my concern for her and her health. I asked her to be patient and concluded that one day soon she would be reunited with her son. I do not know how Rankin got hold of the letter. I had passed it to Fanny, and she had given it to her husband, Eddie. Marshall was furious when Rankin brought the letter to him, and at dinner the next day, my husband informed me that Eddie would be punished for my foolishness. Fanny stood at the sideboard, shocked into silence. "No, Marshall," I said. "Please, no. I alone am responsible."
"You work against me. You undermine me. Someone must be held accountable for your disobedience," he said.
"Be angry with me, Marshall," I said. "I meant no harm."
"You correspond with a whore," he said. "You write that her child is like your own? You sound as mad as my mother."
Armed with the knowledge of Jamie's paternity, my anger rose. "I was at his birth," I said. "Of course I care for him. Belle was like a mother to me."
"Belle,"
he slammed the table with his fist.
"My father's whore."
I rose quickly, giving Uncle Jacob no time to assist with my chair. I rested my hands on the table to steady myself.
"As Beatty is a whore to you?"
I asked, my voice slow and deliberate, and I saw in his face his shock at my knowledge of his unholy union. Behind me, Fanny gasped. When Marshall reached for his wine glass, I noted a tremor in his hand, and seeing his momentary weakness, I struck. "I trust that I can count on you not to punish Eddie for my indiscretion." As I left, Marshall called after me, but I did not turn back. In the middle of January, Beatty lost her child. I was not there for the birth, but Fanny reported on the difficult labor. She told me that Ida and Mama had feared for Beatty's life. Inwardly, I was relieved that the baby died. A week later, we celebrated my darling Ellie's first birthday. That day, when I held my precious child to me, I felt a wave of compassion for Beatty and was guilt-stricken that I had not sent word to her about her loss. I decided to go to the kitchen house to apologize and to see if she had need of anything. It was late afternoon when I slipped out the back door. Fanny was busy tending to Miss Martha, and Mama was cleaning in the library, so I left Ellie in the care of Suki. I knew Beatty was likely beginning the preparations for supper, so I planned only a short visit. As I made my way to the kitchen house, my thoughts of Bea were warm, and I felt certain that she and I could be friends once more. Surely Marshall was done with her. I would have walked directly through the open kitchen door had I not heard Beatty speaking to someone.
"This so pretty," she said. "I never have something like this before."
I froze in place when I heard Marshall's voice.
"I thought you might like it," he said.
I willed myself to quietly back away. Turning, I saw Papa come around the chicken coop. He waved at me in greeting. My fierce desire to run to him for comfort was overruled by my feelings of shock, then shame. Did he know my husband was back in the kitchen house with Beatty? Did they blame me for not keeping my husband away from her and at my side? I turned my back on Papa and went up to the big house. I wonder what depths of despair I might have reached had Meg's letter not been waiting.
Chapter 44 Belle. Will Stevens gets two more men and sends Lucy up from the fields. We work together good, cleaning the big house and putting food away. But Lucy's getting big with another baby, and seeing her like that makes me think of my own boy. Will Stevens does everything he can to get my Jamie back, but nothing works. When winter comes and I still don't have him, the life just goes out of me. Without my Jamie, I don't care about nothing no more. When Ben's holding me one night, he says, "You sure quiet, and you getting skinny." I don't say nothing, because there's nothing to say. "Belle," he says, "is something wrong?" "No," I say. Next day, Lucy says, "Belle, you know you're not acting like yourself. Something wrong? You hear something more about Jamie?" "No," I say, "I don't hear nothing." She looks at me hard, but she stays quiet. A few weeks go by, and I keep working. But I'm real tired. All I want to do is sleep. Papa comes with the news that Lavinia's baby is doing fine. Got hair like fire, just like a mama. He tells me that Jamie's doing real good, but Marshall still don't want to let him go. That night, any fight I got left goes right out of me. Ben and Lucy tell Will Stevens that I stop eating, so he comes down to ask me if I'm sick. "I'm fine," I say. "I'm feeling tired, that's all." He's wanting to get the doctor, but I say, "Thank you. I feel better soon." One cold night, Lucy starts to have the baby. Ben comes running for me, banging on the door. "Lucy wanting you! Lucy wanting you!" He's yelling so loud, I know he's scared. I run. She's in trouble, all right. Ben gets a pass and rides out for the doctor, leaving me alone with Lucy. I try to remember what Mama tells me. "Lucy," I say, "this gonna hurt." Then I get to work. That baby's head needs some help coming out. So Lucy pushes and I pull. And when we finally get him out, I don't know who's more tired, Lucy or me. But when we see the baby, we start to laugh. That boy looks just like Ben. How a fat little baby looks like a big old man, we don't know. But he do. "You get him out, you got to take care of him," Lucy says. "What you gonna call him?"
How about George? I say, like Papa.
George?